everyone. Oh, we got our intro cut short there. I don't know why that happened.
Quick.
It was really quick this time. I'm glad we weren't doing anything dirty on the air or behind the scenes there, Joe.
We'll
just use the extra 10 seconds just to get right into it. All right, everyone. Welcome once again to the Blind Side Blitz, week 16 in the NFL, NFL week 16. Right here, you're looking at Mr. Joe DiCapita over there. And over here, you're not looking at Mr. Jim McPhee, who once again, unfortunately, is feeling a little bit under the weather. Jimmy, if you're out there, feel better, bro. I can't wait to have my Monday nights off again, Joe. So I really need Jimmy McPhee to bring his steady hand to steering this ship. But
right.
I will try to sub in, hopefully, as good as Jimmy typically does it, everyone. I'm Big John here at Grumblings Media, along with Joe DiCapita here for the Blindside Blitz, NFL Week 16. As I said, you can catch us on YouTube, Rumble, Spotify, Pandora, Apple Podcasts. Basically, anywhere you could hear or watch a show, you'll find us there. Just look for at Grumblings Media, everywhere you could catch a podcast. That's enough pimping on that issue, because I'm excited right now, Joe, really excited, because I will tell you why.
Okay.
If it's one thing that spending 20 years in the fantasy sports industry, as both William Del Pilar and I did back in the day, establishing our companies, is never, ever miss an opportunity to gloat about your prescience and how expert you are. You never miss it. You gotta pimp yourself, Joe, in this business. And listen, all joking aside, I gotta give you props. Last week, you came on the show. I came on the show and asked you, like, "Hey, Joe, what's going on down in Atlanta? What do you think is going to happen under center in Atlanta?" And you came up here and you minced no words. Bench Kirk Cousins. He's done. Yes. We got to see Michael Penix under center. They spent the first round. I was going to say wasted, but that's not the right word. They spent a first round pick on this kid, a high first round pick for Michael Penix. Cousins isn't getting the job done anymore. He's gone cold for whatever reason. You're like, let's see what the Falcons have in Penix. And guess what, Joe? They must have been watching the Blind Side Blitz.
They did.
Because about an hour ago, breaking news, Kirk Cousins benched. It'll be Penix, according to Raheem Morris, being the starting QB for the rest of the season. Joe, talk to me about it. First
That's
of all,
right.
how did you know about this? That's the first question.
Well, here's the thing. It's like, Big John, like, what we like to do on this great NFL channel of ours is we like to read the tea leaves.
There you
go. And take a look at some of the details that are going on, and we kind of make our own synopsis about what a team may or may not do. So, quite honestly, when you look at what Kirk Cousins hasn't been able to do in the last several weeks, not just the last couple, but the last several weeks, the guy hasn't thrown a freaking touchdown pass. He has 8 interceptions. What's Atlanta doing when you're trying to get back into that playoff race? What are you doing? You keep giving him the ball, Kirk Cousins, over and over, and it's not working. So it took this long for them to figure it out. Maybe Raheem Morris, maybe our message reached his ears. And he was like, you know what? Maybe these guys might be onto something. I got to be honest. Michael Penix, I don't think he's going to, like, blaze through the NFL right off jump by any means. But what I'm saying is I think that it gives them a much better chance to win every game from here on out for the rest of the season. And I know there's not a long road ahead. But they are 500 right now. They just barely squeaked a win against the Raiders. In that game, it looked like nobody wanted to win.
Right.
And then, so for Penix, all that the information that we can gather is the fact that he's deserving of pass the torch. You know, just pass the torch to Michael Penix. He showed a little bit of flash in preseason when he was given some more opportunities. He protected the ball well, did not turn the ball over, and I understand it was preseason and what have you, but he's showing what is necessary to play quarterback at this level, so why not give the kid a chance and see what he can do with it?
I agree with you at this point. You're absolutely right. Look, we knew the second they drafted him it was an untenable situation. You don't draft a kid first round.
Yes.
And have a veteran for guaranteed for over $100 million. It just does not work out, right? That's just a recipe for disaster. So let's ask the natural question. I got two natural questions for you, Joe, that come out of this. One is, is the offense, do you think the playbook changes with Penix under center as opposed to Cousins? And then the second question is, already, let's look ahead to 2025. What does this mean for the future of Cousins in Atlanta? Right. Because, listen, if for whatever reason they decide to jettison him, that puts a lot of different things into play. Like, it's not a strong quarterback draft in 2025. Mm-hmm. How does Cousins potentially either being traded because he's still under contract, right? So he wouldn't be a free agent, and I doubt they'd cut him, right? So you might be looking at some sort of trade there. So answer both. Let's take those in the order I put them out there. Number one, does the playbook change with Penix under center as opposed to Cousins?
Absolutely, and it has to because he's a different quarterback too. He is way more mobile than Kirk Cousins was. So you might be able to see a lot more play action. You might even see some quarterback runs called. You might see some jet sweeps. They might kind of input that into the playbook. So they are going to change the way they call games and the way they utilize a young rookie quarterback like Michael Penix. But the kid has a cannon for an arm. He is really accurate. He's got great mechanics. So I would really like to see them mix it all up come their next game, and let's see what this kid can do with this offense, because it's not like they don't have weapons. They have a plethora of weapons every level. So why not utilize it all? And with this kid and his specialties now, as far as how much of the playbook are they going to use, I mentioned that they're going to maybe put in little wrinkles here and there, but it's going to come down to Michael Penix. How much was he able to digest throughout the year, sitting behind Kirk Cousins, almost like we're getting close to the end of the season? If he was able to learn the whole playbook already and he's pretty comfortable with it, then the sky's the limit for him.
Who do you think benefits the most out of his supporting cast, right? Like, because there's that too, right? Like, is it London that sees more of an uptick? Because let's face it, London should be the number one receiver on that team.
Yes.
He is. But he's not dominant, right? He's like, you still got you. And listen, I'm not faulting these guys. You got but for my taste, you got too much Darnell Mooney. You got way too much Ray McCloud in that mix, right? And where's Pitts? Where's Pitts in all this, right? We know Bijan's going to get his touches, right? I don't think it does more than potentially take a safety out of the box for Bijan Robinson if Penix can show that he could get the ball deep, right? But so. You tell me, is there one player, like if you're a fantasy player out there, who do you think, aside from Penix potentially, who do you think benefits by having Penix under center the most?
I think Kyle Pitts is going to benefit the most. I think this guy has been he's been under the radar for quite some time. Even when Kirk Cousins got there, it was like I expected myself. I'm like, okay, Kirk's there. He might integrate him a little bit more in this offense, and we didn't see it. It was almost like he was irrelevant and wasn't even involved that much. But when you look at rookie quarterbacks, they tend to go to like more favorable matchups like tight ends. They tend to go for the guys over the middle, slants, outs, all that sort of thing. So Kyle Pitts, but he's a difference maker. He doesn't just run short routes. He could take it long, the long ball too, with his 4.4 speed. So,
But Joe, and I guess this is why it's great talking football, because there's so many different angles you could take this in.
Yeah.
I mean, Pitts, for the most part, is bordering on that bust category, right? Like, because they took him the highest that any tight end's been taken in the last, 20 years or so? So,
yeah,
I mean,
he was fourth overall.
Fourth overall. So, I mean, look, there are some people that are saying, now, understood, he didn't have good quarterback play initially, but Cousins was supposed to correct that for him. It really hasn't happened to any great extent this season. No. Like, is it Pitts? Is it still the quarterback play, in your opinion? Is it the scheme? Mm-hmm. What's going on?
I think it's quarterback play. Like, honestly, it's Kirk Cousins. Kyle Pitts has not been given the opportunity, the ample opportunity, like other tight ends that we hear every single week. Travis Kelce comes to mind. You know what I mean? Sam Laporta, even like last year, he was like on fire, was heavily used. Kyle Pitts needs to be used in that capacity going forward. And the quarterback situation that has been in and out of Atlanta, it's been lacking, to say the least. Kirk Cousins was supposed to be the guy, come in, veteran presence, and spread the ball around. Well, we didn't really see that. And to your point, when you look at Kyle Pitts being neglected, but Drake London himself has been hit or miss this season too. He's right. supposed to be the number one guy. You're supposed to go. He's got to be the go-to guy. What are you doing, Kirk? So now yeah. with this quarterback change, this is going to change things for everybody. Like yeah. we've seen Ray McLeod. We've seen Bijan Robinson and Tyler Algier in the backfield and all that. They're intricate parts of this offense. But now with a different, fresh, young quarterback being thrown into this mix, right. I look for everybody to benefit.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting because Drake London, you know, being a number one receiver, and I'm just doing some quick, you know, I'm an old data head, so I'm looking for some stats here to make sure I got them right. But let's put it this way. In terms of his receiving this year, London on the season has 119 targets through 14 games. That's not enough for a true number one, right? Like a true number one should be somewhere between 9 to 10 targets a game. Like all the elite receivers, their quarterback is looking at him at least 9, 10 times a game. The really greedy ones are getting 11, 12, 13. Look, you look at Nico Collins, guy's getting between 12 and 14 targets a game. Drake London is getting, let's see, what's one, what did I say? It was 119 divided by 14. That's less than, you know, that's like closer to 8, right? If I'm doing my math really good. Yeah, it's a little over 8 targets a game. That's solid, but that's like solid,
that's pretty solid.
Wide receiver 2 numbers, right? That's upper end wide receiver 2 numbers. It's not a wide receiver 1. You got to get greedy with that wide receiver 1. So you're right. I think that they just haven't been targeting the right guy. And if London is being double covered or you can't get to him in time, you're right. Pitts should be seeing a lot more action, and he's not.
Yeah.
I'm still left to wonder if it's a lack of confidence in Pitts because he came in with such high expectations.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see. Unreal. He's so unreal of an athlete. How do you not utilize him? Look at all the athletes that played tight end before him. You know, Jimmy Graham comes to mind, where Jimmy Graham was this kind of former basketball player, but super athletic, big size type of dude, but they lined him out slot receiver. And the guy was just beating corners left and right. Like, that's what I see for Kyle Pitts, but I think that he could be even better than a Jimmy Graham. Like, I think this guy has tremendous, you know, high ceiling potential. Like, you gotta use your weapons. This guy has to be part of the offense.
His measurables are off the chart. There's no doubt about that. Like you look at something like what Brock Bowers has done with the Raiders as a rookie, or like what you said with Laporta last year, or Hockenson when he hit it big, when he went from even when he was on the Lions, but also after they moved him to the, you know, there's still room in the NFL for a tight end to be a game breaker. And I love the tight end position, having played it myself in high school.
You too? Me as well.
Worry about tight ends on the show. Yeah, but that's where they used to put old guards who could catch the ball back in those days. You just put them at the end of the line, have them play off the line. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I'm saying go ahead, make your point.
I just want to get to the second part of your question.
I was getting to that. What happens in 2025? And before you answer, we have a comment here from Linda, and she says, "Aren't you guys looking too far ahead? The Falcons are still in the playoff hunt. So how long a leash will they have with Penix? We saw Penix with Scrubs in the preseason, but now it's the starters." So Linda wants to know, like, hey, do you really think they're going to keep him under center the rest of the way? Or is it like it's only if it comes down to the end of, to one game at the end of the season for a wild card or something, or for the division? Probably not a wild card coming out of the NFC South, but you know, if it's one game for the division, do they still start Penix at that point, or do they go to the old veteran for that potential, like say one game a win and you're in situation? Thanks for the question.
Well, that's the thing. It is a good question, but that's the thing too, is when you look at it, why make the quarterback change now? We know that they're in the playoff race, but this is the reason why, is because they don't have any more confidence that Kirk Cousins can deliver and get them to the playoffs, or even have a chance to make the playoffs. They're 7-7, and they were lucky to get that facing a lowly 2-11 Raiders team at the time. You barely got by them. So, of course, there's no confidence in the fact that he has been playing terribly as at the quarterback position. You look at now, you put Michael Penix in there, yes, it is for the rest of the season. It's definitely for the they're trying to make the playoffs. If Kirk Cousins can't throw, he has 8 interceptions to 1 touchdown, like his first touchdown thrown last against the Raiders. Like, are you kidding me? Like, they've come to realize, like, hey, listen, Kirk's not getting it done. But we got to make a move. We got to do something to stay in the race. So we got to throw the rookie in. Let's see what the rookie can do for the rest of the time. We only got a few games left. And hey, maybe if he limits the mistakes and all he is more even just a game manager, I think they could do it.
Yeah. That 500-yard game of Cousins is a distant memory right now. Nobody's remembering that right now.
That's right. That's right.
And give me like the 1-minute synopsis here. Mm-hmm. 2025. Yeah. What do you see happening in Atlanta?
So this is all very interesting now that they made this change. Now, could it be permanent? Because they did take a high pick on Michael Penix. Now, the thing is, then you look at contract for Kirk Cousins. They paid him a lot of money. You know, if the Falcons were to cut Kirk Cousins prior to the start of 2025, let's just say that for a scenario, they would have to pay $65 million in dead money. That is a huge amount to play that amount of dead money for one player. If they were to trade him, you know, the $27.5 million base salary that he has is guaranteed would transfer over to the acquiring team. So
unless they offset it. Right? Like, you could still work that out in the deal where they have to eat more money, right?
Right, you could. But obviously the Falcons are definitely going to want to try to unrelease some of that money. Yeah. Because then the Falcons would only be responsible for like $37.5 million after that. So they would reduce the money that they have to pay, but at the same time they can get rid of that bonus and it goes to the other team. If they were able to pull it off, because here's the thing, is like you mentioned earlier in the show that this upcoming draft is not a star-studded cast at quarterback at the top level.
It's
lacking mightily this year. So maybe teams that are quarterback needy, maybe a couple of them are like, you know what? We'll take Kirk Cousins off your hands. We'll give you a mid-round to low-round pick. Get him off your hands. Yes, okay, we'll take that bonus money. We'll pay it. And then we have then they have their guy, and everybody's happy. So what I think they go from here is they're going to monitor the rest of the weeks with Michael Penix. If he shows promise, if he shows progress, if he makes the playoffs with him, then I think they've already made their decision going forward and they're going to move on from Kirk somehow.
Which is interesting because if you're out there, let's say, look, no one's going to take that money on and give any pick of value to the Falcons. That's
not high end. No, no.
Yeah. No, so, right. Like, you said his base was like 27 and a half, roughly, his base salary, the outside of the bonus.
The base salary guarantee
is 27 and a half or something.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So, that part of it, let's say that gets traded off right now. Mm-hmm. If you get yourself $27.5 million quarterback that gets you to the playoffs, that's a bargain for whoever picks him up.
Right.
Question is, you know, and let's say they kick back a fifth rounder, because I'm thinking in that thing, if the acquiring team takes on the salary, they're not giving up anything more than a fourth rounder if you're lucky. And if it's one of these teams like the Giants who are drafting high in every round, it might even be as low as a fifth, right? But having said that, again, top three potential Kirk Cousins trade destinations, Joe, in 2025. If the Falcons move on from, give me your top three trade destination. I'm throwing you on the spot. I'm showing the people you know your stuff. So top two or three trade destination. What makes sense to you?
Well, I mean, something that is a little curiosity is the Jacksonville Jaguars with Trevor Lawrence. I know they paid him a lot of money, but Trevor Lawrence has been a shell of himself this year. Very big contrast from him from the year prior. I don't know what they're going to do, because if they move on from Doug Peterson like is expected and they clean that front office up, that whoever is going to take over that new job has no ties to Trevor Lawrence. Do they even like him? You know, this could be a way where they could maybe bring in Kirk Cousins and see what they can do with him in Jacksonville. Other than that, like you got other teams that are kind of like – still looking for quarterback play, probably the Jets. I know it's going to be funny, like, to bring up the Jets because they just have Aaron Rodgers. There's a lot of speculation that Aaron Rodgers is going to be on his way out. Do they bring in another vet and bring in Kirk Cousins? I don't know if they would go that route, but it's something to talk about.
Like, people forget, the Jets will have a high pick. They'll have, like, a top five or top seven pick by the end of this year.
Maybe.
And but there's no QBs. There's no QBs.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. But there's like a seven-way tie for third right now.
I know. But here's one under the radar. And I haven't heard any rumors of this. Mm-hmm. This is just Big John thinking out loud, playing a fantasy manager in his head. Mm-hmm. If they could get him for the right price, I'd love to see him on the Dolphins. And here's what I'm thinking. You can't go through another season with Tua and no veteran backup on that team. They've done it 2 years in a row now. 2 years in a row, it's bitten them in the ass. You can't roll with Tua, who to this day, I still don't know why he's not wearing one of those big kazoo helmets for some reason. If there was ever someone who should be the poster child for kazoo helmets, it's Tua, but he's not. He's not wearing them. But anyway, my point is, you want, if Tua goes down again, and look, I really hope he doesn't go down. I think you got to get someone like a Cousins or a Joe Flacco into Miami. So I think that makes sense there. And if you really think you're going to the Super Bowl. All right. Moving on right now. Let's get to the topics. Go ahead.
I honestly don't think the Dolphins would make that move. I understand what you're trying to say. Get a good – because, listen, backups are important too. And when your starter goes down, yes, you take a drop from that quarterback position, the play, you know, the high-end efficiency on the field, like, you just lose that. And if you lose too much of it, you're pretty much done for the rest of the year, wherever that falls. With a solid quarterback, you can at least maybe have a game manager type of guy, which could get you further along.
You want someone where you've at least got a 50-50 chance of winning. And with the Dolphins, with their backups, it's been closer to like 10%. They just have shown no ability to move them. But let's move on. Let's talk now about a team that now people are saying, is this the team to watch? We've had different teams to watch to go all the way, Joe, this year. We've had the Chiefs, obviously. We've had the Ravens at one point or another. We had the Lions at one point or another. We had the Vikings sneaking in and out of that conversation. But right now, let's face it, are the Bills the team to beat? And I know Jimmy should be here because the Bills are his team, I think. But
he's a Giants fan.
He's a Giants fan, but he's one of those guys that thinks Buffalo's in New York State, which I disagree with. I think it's part of Canada. Debate for another day. but the Bills, Joe, seriously. Give me, like, the top three reasons why the Bills are going to the Super Bowl, bro. Why are they the AFC favorite and not the Chiefs right now?
They have been one of the very few teams that have fought through tremendous adversity in the very beginning of the season. Guys dropping like flies, and not just normal players. Like, we're talking about big-time starters for them. Matt Milano, who, honestly, I wasn't sure if he was going to come back this year.
Right.
But I thought, oh, man, Matt Milano, their captain of their defense, the guy that calls all the plays, gets everybody lined up on defense. Now they're losing him again? Are you kidding me? Like, how's that defense going to operate the same? Then they lose Benford, you know, the other linebacker. And it's like, it was kind of like a snowball effect, you know, for that team, where it's like one player dropping down after another. And then offensively, we got guys never had a number one in the beginning of the year.
Yep.
You know, that was also limiting their offense. But the one guy that was putting the team on his back and carrying this team to many wins is Josh Allen, who a lot of people see, and rightfully so, is going to run away with the MVP award of this season. And you can understand that. A guy has already accomplished so many big feats. There was a couple of them that kind of came to light, like, you know, first quarterback to throw for three and rush for three touchdowns, you know, in a regular season game. He also had some crazy stat, like it was the first ever in NFL history player to get to throw and pass for 35 touchdowns in the first four seasons of their career. He's the only one to do it. He's already starting to exude the excellence that is required to not only win games, but also fight through adversity and get those tough wins. So that's one.
Yeah. So Josh Allen is reason number one.
Reason number one.
Yeah.
Two, their defense was shaky in the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. And we talked about the injuries and all that, and that did play a part, but you still got to find ways to toughen up, to not allow the offense to impose their will and move the ball and score.
Right.
This is a team that's kind of gone through the gauntlet, and they've figured out a way. And I understand some guys were coming back along the way, but it seems like now they're playing their best defense in stride right now. And they're right, and it's at the perfect time. You're at, down towards the end of the season. You're playing really well defense, and now you're getting all your players back on top of it. That's another reason why this team is going to go far.
So heating up at the right time, if I'm hearing what you're saying. It's Josh Allen heating up at the right time. What's number three?
Number three is coaching. This team, and I'll tell you right now, no coach this year has gone under the knife than the Bills head coach. This guy has been thrown under the mat, has been kicked, stomped, beaten by media, just coming down on him like, oh, what are you doing? What's going on the field? Like, what kind of a call is that? What kind of a decision is that? But he held it to himself. He relied on his players, his teammates to fight through everything. And this coaching staff's done a tremendous job. Joe Brady, as the OC, has been calling plays for quite some time. Former Panthers, coach, and now brings his talents to the Buffalo Bills. And this offense with Josh Allen, they're being able to utilize a lot of different things. People say that Josh Allen runs too much. He's going to get hurt. All this. Yeah. That's part of him, though. Don't change it. And Joe Brady recognizes that.
Yeah.
And he's calling plays that fit the best for the team. It also helps that you get Amari Cooper on that offense, too.
Well, yeah, and for people that are looking at Amari Cooper, he's ostensibly the number one. He hasn't been producing the numbers you'd like to see out of that position, but I think having him on the field benefits everybody else. You're seeing better production out of the supporting cast, right?
Yep.
Kincaid's starting to pick up a little bit.
He just came back.
Yeah, and Shakir? Yeah, Shakir.
Khalil Shakir.
And Cole, to some extent. I think Coleman.
And then you have the rookie. You have Keon Coleman.
Keon Coleman needs to pick it up some more. But I will disagree with you on one thing. I'm a little bit worried about their defense. Like, they still gave up a ton of points. Even though they beat the Lions, they still gave up a ton of points. Ed Oliver is – and we may even mention why they beat the Lions. But Ed Oliver – is disappointing me this year. I was a big Ed Oliver fan in the middle, but it seems like he got lazy once he got his contract this year. I know that's maybe not the right word, lazy, fat, comfortable. I don't know what the word is. He just doesn't seem to be holding the point of the attack anymore the way he used to. I don't think people are afraid to run at him anymore. You tell me. You watch Bills more than I do.
I really don't think so. I think Ed Oliver is still a great player, still playing at a high level.
You think he's matching his contract right now?
I do because not everything is going to be on the stat sheet too. Like, you got to look at this guy is a very dominant tackle on the inside. He's requiring double teams every snap, but that also means that he's holding the point of the attack, but also the rest of his guys should be able to win their battles now, too. So, Ed Oliver, he's shown some flashes, especially late this season, where even in the last game they played, like, he was a couple snaps in, he was dominant. And then it seems to be like people are game planning for specifically Ed Oliver every week. And that's what's limiting his stat sheet, you know, what we're used to seeing from Ed Oliver. So some people might view him having a down year. I don't. I still think the guy is a tremendous D tackle. I would love him on my team. But the bottom line is that defense has gotten better over time. And I don't have any concerns at all. I got to be honest with you.
Yeah. Well, to be honest with you, I was looking it up, and I will say one thing. I'm being brutally honest here. Their defense doesn't scare me right now. But I will say one thing. They're opportunistic, and they do have, they're tied for the best turnover differential in the NFL right now. So that's a combination of Josh Allen really cutting down on the INTs this year, and the defense, like you said, stepping they didn't up. Give up a lot of yardage. They're stepping it up, at least in critical moments. They're at a plus 18, 13 interceptions, 12 fumbles on the year. So they're opportunistic, at least. I'll give them that much. But to take it into context, considering they turned over essentially their entire secondary, Milano's been hurt. He just came back on the field last week or 2 weeks ago. Their linebackers, Dotson used to be there. They got rid of it. Benford was hurt. They've been playing with Terrell Bernard, who I like. I like Bernard. I think Williams, with Dorian Williams, when he came in, I think he played very well. I think if somebody's been criminally underestimated and underrated for the Bills defense, I think it's Dorian Williams. Because the second Milano came by, that poor guy is back on special teams. He's down to one tackle a game and now. But I think he was a good cover linebacker. He could still blitz. And I think he was he's a very underrated linebacker for them, in my opinion. Now, whether he blows assignments or not, I'm not 100% sure because I'm not familiar with their scheme that much. But the Bills, they're a serious contender. And as we head into the next topic, depending on what you think of Patrick Mahomes' status right now, is there a chance that the Bills can take over the number one seed in the AFC? Right now, you're looking at KC at 13-1, and Buffalo, I think, has three losses, right? So I'm trying to look at the standings, and I'll let you know for sure. I'm sorry. The Bills are 11-3, so they're two games behind the Chiefs. If they end up tied with the Chiefs, they get the tiebreaker. So do you think that with three games left in the season and Patrick Mahomes now getting injured, rolled up, he may play this week, but let's face it, he was hobbling. It's an outside chance, but can the Bills catch the Chiefs for the number one seed in the AFC?
I think they can. I mean, but the Chiefs have to lose in order for them to do that. You know, it's at a point where, and we even got the whole, everybody's, you know, talking about Mahomes. Like, is he going to play? Is he not going to play? Should you play him? Right. I mean, that's, to me, that's the biggest question of all this is, should you play a beaten up Mahomes? The Cleveland Browns really took him out to the woodshed last week, and they physically beat him up so much so that by the end of the game, the guy could barely walk to the sideline. I mean, now he's got a bum ankle again. He's hobbling. He's been beaten up.
They rolled up his ankle, right? That one play, they rolled up his ankle. That's why he came out of the game. So I guess that is the question, Joe. Do you sit Mahomes and say, let him get fully healthy for the playoffs? Mm-hmm. Listen, it's going to take a minor miracle for the Bills to overcome us, right? Because they got to make up two games in 3 weeks, which is, look, statistically speaking, that's almost impossible with two quality teams, right? So if you're the Chiefs, what do you do?
Honestly, if you're the Chiefs, I think you got to play it smart. I think you got to sit Mahomes. Because we've seen him grind through a high ankle sprain before. They shot him up with painkillers before each game, even at halftime, to keep him going. I just don't think that's a good idea to go for the rest of his career. You want to keep, you know, killing the pain but not fixing it until the offseason. It worked out the first time. I don't think it's going to work out the second time. He could majorly re-injure that, and he'll be done for the rest of the leading into next season. I don't think you want that. I don't think you want to risk your top level player on offense, especially at the quarterback position in Mahomes, and risk him sitting out even longer than you anticipated. Now we're not at the end of the season. We still got a few weeks left. Why not rest the dude until he's ready to go? Because even if, let's just say hypothetically, even if the Bills do catch them, the Bills get the number one seed, the Chiefs have the number two seed. Even if that happens,
Right.
That's the worst that could happen, is that you're the second seed. The worst. But you come into the playoffs with a healthy Mahomes. That gives you the best chance to win no matter who you face.
And it means, but the only downside would mean that you'd have to go to Buffalo, which I understand they beat them last year, but they still have to go to Buffalo, which nobody wants to do in the middle of the winter, right? As opposed to being in Kansas City, right? So I understand your point. Like, I would tend to agree with you. Unless Mahomes is 100%, I agree with you. I would sit him down. It's just not worth risking your run at history to be the first three-time consecutive Super Bowl winner, which everybody gave him very long odds to pull off. So if you had if you had a futures bet on the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl, I think it was paying off some like 8,000, plus 8,000 on that, something like that. So that's tough, So I would sit him. I'd agree with you. I would sit him. Mm-hmm. The question is, would Mahomes refuse to sit? Because we know they've tried to sit him. They've tried to take him out of games, and we know he's just going to put some tape on it. Look, as much as I think he takes advantage of the rules, he tries to take advantage of the fact that quarterbacks are like a protected a species in the NFL. I get it. And he actually – I heard him quoted last week where he said, I'm not going to do that anymore. If I'm heading out of bounds, I'll just go out of bounds because he understands now. It might be worth the 15-yard penalty just to hit the guy. But
anyway, exactly.
Can Carson Wentz, like we were before when we were talking about the Dolphins having to get a decent backup quarterback in case Tua goes down, is Wentz – now, he came in for, a half basically last week. Is Wentz – now, don't forget – former, second overall pick, has been a very good player until his knee injury in this league. Do you think Wentz is the type of quarterback that can at least give the Chiefs a fighting chance of winning if he's in there?
I think so. I mean, there's a reason why they specifically brought Wentz in when he was a free agent, because they viewed him as a guy who can do similar things that they like to do in offense at the quarterback position. Because we're all well aware of Mahomes' mobility and how he's much faster than people anticipated. So he's got the mobility. He's got the arm. Carson Wentz, it's not like the guy has never been able to start. We've seen him start for the Eagles. We've seen him play very well at times for the Eagles. But then we've also seen him kind of slide off, especially after that injury. I don't know if he was ever over it mentally when he came back, and I feel like that's kind of what limited him and what he was able to produce on the football field. Now that he's had a ton of time to think about it and to get over it, the Chiefs brought him in. He's also more mobile than you think. He's a physical quarterback. He could rush if he has to rush. He's got the arm. He is accurate if he's got a clean pocket. So I think that he could be that game manager for the Chiefs and do what's necessary to help them win.
Yeah. I think he's capable. Whether or not, like you said, he's all there in terms of is he over the injury and can he see the field the way he needs to see the field? I think that's the bigger question. And, hey, what better time? Get him in there for these next 2 weeks even. Get him in there. Get him some real experience in case he does have to come in. But when I say real experience, people say, but Big John, he's already been, with the Eagles. I get that. Yeah. But I mean experience in the Chiefs system under game conditions with Andy Reid yelling in his ear, with guys, the best. So I think that would be smart on the Chiefs' part.
That's the other thing, too, though, is – not enough credit, I feel like, goes to Andy Reid and for him calling with the plays like he does and everything, because Mahomes greatly benefits from having Andy Reid as a head coach when he came into the NFL. If Mahomes didn't have Andy Reid, Mahomes would struggle big time. And with Wentz now possibly going to start for the Chiefs, I feel like Andy Reid isn't going to call anything that's out of the realm of possibility for Wentz to execute. Like, he's going to call it exactly how it should be for Wentz to be comfortable to just, because we've seen him do receiver screens, a lot of those, a lot of slants, a lot of quick right. stuff, right? And I think that's what's going to help Wentz out if, in fact, he does start.
Yeah, you're right. I think you're right. I think Reed has been getting his credit, but I agree with you. Like when everyone starts talking about the best coaches in the NFL, and Reed's name doesn't come up at the worst second, I just sit there and giggle. Yeah. You know, I'm like, do you know what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Of course. I don't know if he's a great human being or not, but like as a coach.
He does love cheeseburgers, though. I know he's a huge fan of cheeseburgers.
Yes, he does love cheeseburgers. That is absolutely true. Okay, let's get one more comment in from Linda. Going back to our Bills conversation, I don't understand the second point referring, I guess, to the Bills' defense. Mm-hmm. They've allowed 42, 42, 35, and 30 in the past 4 weeks with a loss thrown in there for good measure. Mm-hmm. Is that what's making them better in her opinion? Mm-hmm. She's asking, Joe,
yeah.
when you say these guys are coming back, is that the reason you think they're getting better heading into the home stretch?
100%. These guys were the original starters, and they've missed some significant time, and that's where it was lacking in some of the holes of the defense. So now they're getting them back, especially their defensive captain, Matt Milano. I think that is such a critical thing for them as they approach the playoff run, is getting all their ducks in a row. I understand they gave up 40-plus points here and 40-plus points there, but I would argue that the reason why the defense is – and Rams defense, the Bills defense, the reason why they gave it up, not because the defenses were playing poorly. No. Those offenses are out of this world. They're playing out of their minds. The Bills, the Detroit Lions, the Rams that week, out of their minds. It's over and above what they should be allowed to do with the NFL. It's almost like they're playing Madden on the football field, and they're able to score crazy amount of points. So I'm not concerned with the Bills defense as they kind of are now getting finally getting healthy, getting in tune as they approach the playoff run.
Right.
That's the real reason why I think this defense is nothing to be concerned about.
Okay, that's a good point. And Linda, once again, thanks for watching and thanks for your question. Linda is a big fan of the channel, Joe. I've noticed she's popped up on a lot of different shows.
She's everywhere.
Yeah, she might be a lonely chick. I don't know. Maybe she just likes gawking at some good-looking fellas on this channel. I don't know. Anyway, let's move on. One of the other topics I wanted to get to, because every week, you know, I don't know if you know this or not, Joe, but the only joy I get in my life is Sundays are my day. I sit in front of my TV. I lock the door down here. No one's allowed to come down to my office. I turn on the big screen, and all I do is sit here, eat my keto snacks, and watch the Red Zone all day. That is my joy in life, right? That's it. But as they're hopping from game to game to game, one of the things that has struck me lately is this – almost random occurrence. It's like a lightning strike. You never know when it's going to hit. You'll see a flag. You'll see a critical play. Maybe someone didn't quite get to the line to gain, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And you hear this. Replay assist has determined that there is no pass interference. Replay assist says that was an incomplete pass. And you're like, who is this replay assist? And where's he coming from? Who's being charged the timeout? Who's challenging? You know, so all joking aside, this bothers me because it's like soccer. I still don't understand what offsides is in soccer. To me, it's just a way to throw a game.
Yeah.
Like, hey, somebody scored a goal they weren't supposed to cover the spread in Europe. Let's call it offsides. I honestly think that's what it is. I I've never seen such a dodgy rule in my life. One of the reasons why soccer is a communist sport. But moving on to the replay assist rule, okay? Let me read what the NFL rulebook has to say about it. Then you tell me if it makes any sense. It says, the assistance rule applies to plays where there is clear and obvious video evidence to proactively address specific objective rulings, such as the spot of the ball or a foul, complete or incomplete pass, and touching of the ball or a line. and some examples these can be applied to: penalty enforcement, confirmation of the proper down, spot of a foul, game clock administration, possession of a loose ball, complete or incomplete pass, loose ball touching a boundary line, goal line, or end line, location of the football or player in relation to a boundary line, line of scrimmage, line to gain or goal line, or player down by contact when not ruled down on the field. And for 2024 specifically, the competition committee expanded it to include roughing the passer, late hits out of bounds, or intentional grounding. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, what doesn't it cover? Right? Well, like, they listed everything that you could use a regular coach's challenge for. Uh-huh. So, Joe, again, is this like offsides in soccer? Because, again, I'm not understanding it.
Yeah.
And it seems to me to be arbitrarily applied. Like,
yeah.
Look, when it's working, like, let's say, like a receiver short hop the pass, right? You're like, mm-hmm. and they'll immediately run in and say, no, incomplete. That guy behind him got it wrong. He had the wrong angle. You know, replay assist. And you're like, hey, something's working with these rules. Mm-hmm. But then there's this other one where, like, why does a coach need to throw a challenge flag when the guy was juggling the ball on his way out of bounds? Like, he got his feet in bounds, but he mm-hmm. didn't have control of the ball. Everybody saw it with the naked eye.
Yes.
Why does a coach need to talk? Why does he need to waste one of his challenges? So talk to me about this.
That's it. I mean, honestly, that's the problem right there. The problem right there is the fact that it's inconsistent with making some of these tight calls. Now, I would even argue, where's the illegal hits? Shouldn't they be reviewable? Because all too often, referees just throw the flag. And I get it. Their job is not easy. It's a split second they're trying to make a judgment call on.
Right.
So anytime there's a very hard hit, it's automatic. They're throwing the flag. If they think it's very vicious, and they're just going to throw the flag because they can't see it. They can't really see it. It's not slowed up for them. So I feel like the replay assist, I don't know, the leader of the replay assist, you know, guy, you know, or girl or whoever that's doing it, it's got to be expanded to any call, anything that's not clear. That's really what it's got to come down to. And the problem is that, like we mentioned, it's inconsistent. When do we see it? Oh, once in a while. Like, I maybe saw it maybe two or three times this weekend.
Right.
But then next week, we might not see it at all being called, even though there might have been a judgment call on the catch. There might have been a judgment call on pass interference. There might have been a judgment call withholding. Like, so my problem is that the NFL, just like the referees, are inconsistent in how they utilize the replay assist. It should come down to try to keep the integrity of the game, to try to make it to where every single game is going to be called as fair as possible. It needs to be expanded on any close call, any gray area call, which would take the referees out of harm's way, out of the crosshairs in terms of fans and all that. Because if you have a replay assist, that's going to help the referees too. Like, hey, listen, we know that you called it a first down. We radio down to them. Hey, Jerry, we got to take a look at this real quick. Boom, they look at it, they come down. Oh, it is a first down. They got it. They can correct the game in the flow of the game, not waste too much time. We've seen this be utilized in college football. They look at plays all the time. They stop the game. They review the play, make the call, let's move on. The NFL should adopt that even more going forward with the NFL to help not just the referees and their in their calls of the gray areas, but also it's going to help the integrity of the game that a lot of people are questioning this season, a lot. Some people are saying it's fixed. Some people are saying, well, everybody's helping the Chiefs, you know, win games. Replay assist can void all that.
Is it – I hear what you're saying, but is it really something that could be incorporated into the flow of the game? Because I think a lot of these calls that let's face it, even with the traditional replay challenge system, things I would say overwhelmingly get done correctly. Okay, there's still those occasional outliers where like, you know, that should have been overturned, but it wasn't type of thing. But those are becoming rare and rare. I think, you know, with the multiple cameras, the ability to communicate with the New York office while they're watching the replay, I think has cut down on the egregious mistakes. Right now, the only ones that are still up for debate are the ones where, hey, it was called one way on the field, so we don't have overwhelming evidence to overturn it. You know, that sort of thing is the one little, hey, there's some excitement in whether this call gets overturned. Mm-hmm. But, like, for everything, because I think the things where these things really could come in handy, like, look, all year I've been saying this. I don't know what happens when the Bengals are playing, but it seems like every umpire swallows his whistle when it comes to Joe Burrow getting beat up. I've never seen a quarterback take, like, hits the way he does after letting the ball go, and no penalty is called.
No calls.
And these other, no calls. And then, you know, everybody else, ticky-tack fouls, roughing the passer, you landed on them the wrong way or whatever, right? Crazy stuff. Like, now, to me, if you're going to have replay assist, why isn't it like, hey, I just noticed Myles Garrett tried to twist Burrow's head off after he let go. And there was one play where he grabbed him by the face mask.
Yeah, face mask penalty that never got called. Yep.
And that was so blatantly obvious. Mm-hmm. Why wasn't replay assist involved in that? Now, if you're telling me they're only good for overturning things that were called and not introducing new penalties,
mm-hmm.
Okay, fair enough. That's the rule. But then is it in the coach's challenge? Like, can the coach challenge for something that didn't get called?
No.
But now think it through. Then what happens? Look, there's holding on every play, right? That's an old
–
if you play tight end, you know that's true. There's holding mm-hmm. on every play, basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now do you get to this crazy thing where, okay, that was a critical fourth down that we came up short on. Can we review to see if there was a holding on the offensive holding or offensive defensive illegal contact or, you know – it gets crazy after a point. So I'm almost to the point where get rid of the replay assist.
No.
How much is it added?
No, a lot. Replay assist, whenever they've come into these really close calls,
yeah.
A lot of times the refs are proven wrong in these replays assists. They are right. Detrimental to the league going forward. And I would argue you have to expand it even more for anything that they miss. If there's something that's egregious, like, I'm sorry, you'd bring up Joe Burrow and how his face got contorted looking backwards.
Yeah.
I don't know how the line judge missed it. I can't fathom it because it wasn't even – I could understand it if it was inside the line of scrimmage. There's guys around him.
In the pocket,
see it. I get that part. But the fact that it was off tackle, out in the open – and the line judge never called it, it blows my mind.
It's crazy. But
that's when the replay assist could jump in and be like, hey, guys, you really missed this. I don't know how you did, but this has got to be the call. And then replay and go forward. This is why replay assist is necessary. Because, one, the referees in the NFL are part-time referees. They're the only American sports league that has part-time refs.
That's
the
crazy.
Biggest thing in America, the biggest sport in America, and you got part-time refs still, everybody else
crazy.
Got full-time.
Crazy.
So that's one big problem. And the fact that if you're going to continue to have part-time referees, you need replay assist to help them in every single game. And that's why it's so critical to expand it to – I'm not saying – that you're going to call a ticky-tack penalty every time you see it on replay assist. It's not what I'm saying. But something that's egregious that needs to be called, it has to be looked at. It has to be figured out and ironed out and moved forward. It is so imperative that the NFL does expand this.
Like, in theory, I agree with you, but I come down to this, too. More than any other sport, the NFL is ruled by gambling, legal gambling, I mean. And when I say that, I mean no league has to be more conscious of appearing to have 100% integrity. That, you know, we're not going to have the Kennedy situation that happened in the NBA where there's a referee on the take, you know, during the games for a full season, right?
Yeah.
You can't have that, all joking aside, right? So with replay assist, how easy is it going to be like, hey, let's call back that punt because look at Joe Burrow, to your point, he got his head twisted around and nobody called it. Well, okay, but why didn't you call it in the game where my team was trying to cover the 4-point spread? You know what I mean? It becomes the potential for the loss of integrity, I think, is there, especially amongst gamblers, don't you think?
I don't give a shit about gamblers. Like, honestly, like, this is about the NFL. This is not about gambling. Like, if you want to, that's the whole point of gambling. You're gambling. So more times than not, you're going to lose your money. You know, every once in a while you look out and you win, but more times than not, you lose. And if that's just ridiculous. Like, I understand that there is a gambling entity now. The NFL's involved. They finally said, hey, all right, fine. We'll let you guys gamble on the games. Like, they kind of bucked down and said, knowing that there's a money train involved with that. They know that they're going to get their cut at the end of the year and all that. But this is about making the right calls. This is about, you know, your team not feeling screwed out of like, hey, you know what? Man, that was a huge call. That could have went either way, but I'm not really sure. They never showed the replay on the television screen, so I don't even know. I think it was in, but it could have been out. But, you know, it leaves all that doubt and uncertainty of the league now being called, you know. They're saying, oh, well, you know, since you did legally gambling, now you're kind of your hands out. You're getting paid off for certain weeks, certain games, certain players. Now people think it's fixed because they opened up the doors with gambling. So you got to save face here. You got to have some integrity, make the game great again, is what I would argue.
If you're going to make the game great again, at least get your coaches not to kick onside kicks with 12 minutes left in the fourth quarter. That's the other thing you can do.
usually that's how you get fired.
Linda, who has nothing better to do tonight, I guess. We're just kidding you, Linda. She says, damn right, Joe, if I wasn't too hot for you, I'd give you a big kiss on that dome of yours. I guess she agrees with your not giving a crap comment, Linda, there. So, Joe, shine up that head of yours so Linda can give that big kiss on your head up there. There you go, buddy. Shine it up good. Get the women all hot and bothered for that. Okay. As we're going to do now, let's quickly take a look at the Thursday night game, which is the 9-5 Broncos against the 8-6 Chargers. And this sounds like a great game, right? It sounds like a good game. The Chargers are field goal favorites. They're 3-point favorites. The over-under is at 42 points. Joe, you said you're not a gambling man, but I will do the following since I am. I will say this. I think I would take the Chargers to cover the 3 points, and I think I might even take the under 42. I don't think it's going to be a high-scoring game. But that's me. I'm rusty at this gambling. I haven't done it regularly for the last season, but I'll start again now. I'll take the Chargers, give up the field goal, and I think I'll go under 42 points. What do you see happening in this game?
You got the 9-5 Broncos, and you got the 8-6 Chargers. This has definitely playoff implications in the AFC West. The seeding is there. Broncos are fighting for a higher seed, not only just to cement themselves into the playoffs, but to keep climbing that ladder. And I'm got to be honest, early on, before week one occurred, when we broke down these teams, I looked at the Denver Broncos and I'm like, all right, they got a rookie quarterback. How good is he going to be? We really don't know. You know, like there was some uncertainty for me, especially offensively. Defensively for the Broncos with Vance Joseph, he was a new D coordinator. He was going to implement some new philosophies, and I thought they were going to be good, but not this good. The Denver Broncos are one of the best defenses in the league, and you pair that up with Bo Nix, his rookie year, getting comfortable as the year continues. He looks much different than the guy you saw in week one. Now you're looking at a competent quarterback that's getting plays done. They're putting points up now with that defense. And then you got the Chargers. Chargers have been a very blue-collar, grind-the-football-down-your-throat type of team. They love to run the ball, but What's different now about these Chargers is they are also very different from their week one performances. They no longer run the ball down your throat constantly. They've become more of a balanced offense, utilizing Justin Herbert, and rightfully so, a guy who is a very good quarterback, and it's actually opened up this offense. Now that they're throwing a lot more, it's opened up. The running plays are now have more explosive plays down the field, and the Chargers defense is also rising to the occasion. So both teams are on a high level. They're both playing at a high level. This is going to be an epic game to watch Thursday night. And I got to be honest with you, they always say defense wins championships. So I'm going to go with the Denver Broncos on this one. I love the defense. I love how aggressive they are. And I think the Broncos are going to get it done against Chargers.
I could very – like, you, it wouldn't take much to talk me into saying the Broncos are going to win this one, right? I will say the one concerning thing about the Chargers to me – is the lack of playmakers. They don't have playmakers on offense. Now, I love Justin Herbert as a quarterback. I know there are better statistical quarterbacks, guys who put up better numbers. But when I watch the game, Herbert to me is what a quarterback, like if I was to build a quarterback, he's the kind of quarterback. I mean, obviously everyone would say Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson. But I'm saying like for me, the tall quarterback, who can run on occasion, but has a cannon arm, good accuracy, stands tall in the pocket, quiet, leadership ability. Justin Herbert is that guy. Like, if you were to put him on the, you know, draw it up on blueprints, I think it's Justin Herbert for me. Like, I've always loved Justin Herbert coming out of college, and I loved him to the Chargers. But he's banged up this year. And, yeah, they got the running game. The offensive line is starting to gel a little bit more because they got a lot of young guys playing together for the first time there. Young veterans, Joe Alt, also the rookie in there. But, like, where are his weapons? Where are his consistent weapons?
That's been Edwards, a big problem.
So, Quentin Johnson?
Yes.
At times I see him come through, and at other times, like, I'll see it hit him right on the number one on his jersey, and it just bounces off his hands, right? I don't know what's going on with him. I can't even – Ladd McConkey, maybe, working the slot, but he doesn't scare anyone.
Ladd McConkey has been the go-to guy, has been the number one wide receiver for this team, and he's only a rookie. I mean, this kid has been, you know, lighting it up. You know, Justin Herbert has tremendous confidence in him. He's got phenomenal hands, runs great routes. And we saw that coming out of college at Georgia, that he was going to be a difference maker for somebody, whoever took him in the draft. And here the Chargers are. But here's my thing is you mentioned the lack of wide receivers. Now, this stems from the philosophy of Jim Harbaugh, who back in college, he didn't really recruit receivers heavily. And then when he got to the NFL ranks, he was like, well, I don't really need the best receivers. I'm okay with what we got. We'll draft them in the draft, and we're going to move forward because we're a running team. Well, that's changed now. You've become more of a balanced team now where you do need the high-end number one receiver. You need that go-to guy and the number two guy. So that's kind of where it's conflicting right now.
They're evolving, and you can see the Chargers are well coached, which is why I think they're going to win this game, right? And they have a veteran quarterback as opposed to Bo Nix, the rookie quarterback. Now the pressure's starting to mount a little bit. And believe me, Bo Nix is another Oregon guy who surprised me. Like, I thought he was a dink-and-dunk quarterback. Now it's turning out that it was probably more the scheme that he was asked to play rather than any physical limitations. I had those questions coming out. God. Smart guy, but – you know, does he have the arm strength? Does he have the mobility? I think the answer is yes to both those questions. We've seen that now out of him. So it'll be interesting, but that's why I like the Chargers. All right, Joe, let's end right now. What was that?
That's me.
That's you. That's you. That's Joe right there. Let's end this on a high note. We just went over the Thursday night game, so tune in to see if who's going to be proven right. Big John by taking the Chargers, or Joe and his field goal taking the Broncos, and the field
Broncos
goal
and the defense
on the road. But here's the really exciting news. Hopefully, Jimmy McPhee will be back to take his seat right here instead of me next week. Because, like I said, I like my Monday nights free, Joe. As much as I love sitting here with you, I'm too lazy at this age. I can't take this anymore every Monday night.
But I just want to say real quick, thanks everybody that tuned in. Linda, you're awesome. Thank you for tuning in and had some great questions for us. Become part of the Blitz Nation. It's very easy to do. Head over to Grumblings at the channel there. Subscribe. Hit that subscribe button for us. Hit the thumbs up. Share it to everybody you know. And make sure you drop in the comment sections just like Linda did, because we do respond live in person with anything that you have to comment about. So that's what it's all about. And you can check us out at grumblingsmedia.com, where you can get some great articles, other great podcasts like ourselves. And, you know, we also have a little thing called iTunes. You know, you're on there too. You know, so Pandora, you know, all that. And rumble.com. I feel like Rumble. We don't say Rumble.com that much.
Yeah, we're starting to build a following on Rumble as well. And also, here's another reason why I like Joe, folks. He's more than willing to share the pimping duties. I started the show with him. Joe will close with them. It's sort of like he's my muscle, you know, at the end of the show. You know, keep all the players in line is Joe there. But thanks, everyone, for joining us here on the Blindside Blitz. Join us again next week, Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern. Join us here to cover everything that's involved with the NFL. For the absent Jim McPhee and Joe DiCapita, peace, everyone.